Spirit Blade Underground, episode 366. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 366.
And welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and hopefully inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. All right, on the show today, my review of Jurassic World and my increasingly unreasonable rant and wish list for announcements at this year's E3, which is already upon us, beginning this Sunday evening and going into the rest of the week. Very excited, and hope that some of my unreasonable wishes will come true. All right, here we go. I'm trying to race through this review. I got two boys downstairs that are probably going to start beating the snot out of each other really fast. Normally I would save this for a time when I'm guaranteed to be able to do it without being interrupted, but my time is too precious to me today, and I just want to fire this sucker out with as little effort as possible, because I kind of feel like maybe that was part of the creation process for this film. All right, Jurassic World, let's talk about it. The synopsis, I'm not going to give you the IMDb synopsis. Here's my synopsis. 23 years after scientists cloned dinosaurs in an attempt to create a theme park, which resulted in multiple horrific human casualties and a T-Rex getting loose in New York, people have decided that the whole dinosaur theme park idea was in fact a great one and decide to move forward with building the rebranded Jurassic World, which millions of customers who are completely aware of how wrong things went in the past have been visiting year after year, demanding more frightening and life-threatening dinosaurs to look at. A mother and father, in the midst of marital struggles, decide it's a good idea to send their two sons off to this theme park without them, while the scientists in charge of dinosaur cloning decide real dinosaurs aren't enough and they should make a super dinosaur made up of the most terrifying and dangerous dinosaurs ever to stalk the earth. And of course everyone is confident that nothing could possibly go wrong except for the one guy who is right about everything but who no one listens to until blood is soaking the room. All right. So, story. If not for the blood and violence, this would be a kids' movie. Maybe a family movie, but I would almost say kids, because there are two chief kid protagonists, and they're part of an ensemble cast, but they have very significant roles. I would say more so than the two kids in the original Jurassic Park. And the youngest of those two is just overempowered. He's too smart. They're both too brave and kind of stupid. That's just one example of echoes of the original movie, but really this is the same plot skeleton in the past three movies, recycled over and over and over again. We've got naive billionaires and morally indifferent scientists who devote themselves to a vision that is destined to go very, very bad. One thing that was missing in this movie, I think it really could have used, is the expert, the dinosaur expert. We had that in 1 and 3, not so much in 2, a little bit in 2, but this had no dinosaur expert to tell us what we're in for and build anticipation about these dangerous dinosaurs we're going to encounter. So there was no tension built that way as the lore of these dinosaurs was explored in, you know, with kind of reverence and fascination or whatever you might call it. I felt like in especially the first one, but even in the second one as well, that there was this sense of discovering this world that I'm really not familiar with because I'm not a dinosaur buff. And so having them kind of talk about their hunting patterns and stuff like that and their special abilities and stuff, it was cool. It was like a monster movie in that sense where the monster is slowly revealed over time, either because people are discovering things about it or saying things about it, or you're just seeing more of it and what it can do as the movie unfolds. And I really missed kind of that aspect of monster movies in this flick. There was just lots of CG and crazy directions that the story took instead. Like now the raptors are trying to be, they're trying to train them to be like hunting animals for the people, or it's so weird. Monster franchise rule number one for me, if you're making a movie for me anyway, don't make us root for the monster. As soon as you do that, like if you look at the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie from back in like the, I don't know, early 80s, it was decent. It was decent. But I mean, more and more as that series went on, you're rooting for the bad guy, you know? And you see that in a bunch of horror movies and monster movies as they progress and have more and more sequels, you know? And that's totally what's going on here. And it just takes so much tension and threat out of the experience of watching the movie. Okay, hold on 1 second. Do you need something? What do you need? I can, but I'm recording right now, so I'm going to come down and help you as soon as I'm done, okay?
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, so characters are either painfully foolish or way smarter than they have any right to be in this movie. This story would never happen, and not just because of the whole dinosaur cloning thing, but because people are far more cautious, paranoid, whatever you might want to call it, than this. You know, if some kind of, like, disaster happened at Disneyland where, like, horrible beasts, not just a machine breakdown, but like an animal that, you know, had like a degree of choice and like just behavior that's unpredictable and stuff. Oh my gosh. We just wouldn't, I mean, there would be so many logistical issues that we would have at least prepared for, you know, if we did decide to still go through with a theme park like this, full knowing full well what happened in freaking New York with the T-Rex in New York and people dying on the island and people dying on the island again a few years later, you know. I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, it was established that it was public knowledge in Jurassic Park 3 when people were asking Sam Neill's character. They all want to ask him questions about New York and about the stuff that happened on the island and stuff like that. And of course, you know, a T-Rex going loose in New York, you know, it's public knowledge. I don't understand the premise of this movie. It doesn't make any sense to me. And also, like, having knowledge of all those things that happened in the past, you know, I'm watching this movie and I'm like, they should be preparing for all these eventualities. You know, it's like those horror movies, like, which I am tired of now. When I see people in a horror movie, which this isn't quite, but it has elements of it. When I see people in a horror movie doing stupid stuff and you're wanting to yell at the screen and say, "Don't go into the basement, you moron. It's right there. You know it's going to be right there. What are you doing?" You know, that really doesn't work for me. It works up to a point. But if I feel like there's a point at which the characters become so stupid that I'm like, you know what? You have brought this on yourself. I no longer have any sympathy for you because you are like beyond foolish. Like I've never met a person as foolish as you. It's just so unrealistic how foolish you are. And I felt like that's what was going on all over the place in this movie. There were so many things that I am not equipped to run a theme park or do anything remotely what these people are doing. And I would have been like, hey, should we consider this possibility? I mean, Oh my gosh. So I was like, within the first 30 minutes, disconnected from these foolish people and their fate. Why not a true Jurassic World? When I first heard the title of this movie, I thought, wow, that has a lot of potential. Are we finally going to see the dinosaurs coming off the island and humanity as a whole having to deal with the fact that dinosaurs, or something very close to them, since they're not quite true dinosaurs, are now like part of the ecosystem, the global ecosystem now? How would we deal with that? Not necessarily. I mean, you could go like post-apocalyptic, like everybody's just kind of hiding underground from the dinosaur menaces that have now taken over the world. But I don't think you need to do that. I think it could be somewhere like a really interesting middle ground where it's just kind of like, you know, people in more rural areas, you know, maybe have to just be more cautious about the various wild animals that might live in the area. And so there's just different precautions that they take. You know, I would be interested in a world that was a Jurassic World where people were still trying to go about their business, but of course business and commerce and all these kinds of things have changed because people just have to be much more cautious on a day-to-day basis because there are just dinosaurs that are on the outskirts of cities and stuff like that. I mean, there's so much potential to take this series in a totally different direction, and They just failed to do that. I mean, this is 14 years now since the last movie was made in the series. 20-some since the first one was made, but 14 since the last one was made. And that's plenty of time to kind of sit back and say, you know, what would be worth it? You know, what kind of story would make it worth it to bring this franchise back and to do something new, take it in a new direction? I love it when franchises take a break for a while and then they come back with a reinvigorated concept. And that's really what should have happened, in my opinion, with this movie, and it didn't. This story felt like it was one that was just cranked out, you know, to make another one 2 years after Jurassic Park 3. But it's been 14 years! 14 years! And they're still using these formulas! And it's, oh man, ish. And it's not even, they're not even executing them, in my opinion, as well as they were executed in the past. I mean, it's so strange that 14 years, they had 14 years to prep for this. And I don't get it. I don't get it. Cast, performances. Okay, do I have my sign? There's my sign. I want to make sure that you guys can see pictures of these guys. Oh, but I don't remember any of their names. Oh, yeah, I got Chris Pratt. Is that his name? I didn't even do my research. I felt like if these guys... Somebody along the line didn't put in the effort they should have when crafting this movie. A lot of people did, but I have to believe that somewhere along the line, somebody phoned it in. So I'm not going to put much effort into my review either, I guess. But the cast was fine. The cast was good. In fact, they were solid. And the youngest actor's emotional access is really impressive. There's no bad acting in this movie, as far as I'm concerned. Just shallow, uninteresting characters that are like no one that I know. It worked for me in the 90s, but even then it wasn't as extreme, I don't think, as it is in this movie. Well, maybe, I don't know. But it doesn't work for me today. Whatever, maybe I've changed, maybe culture has changed, expectations and what kind of stories are told in film have changed. I don't know, but something's different. I don't like it. Good job, actors. I wish you had better material in this movie. The stunts and visuals, CG, all over the place. So if you're like me and you have an eye that's cursed to pick out CG, whether it's great or bad, you're going to be disappointed. It is improved slightly from the first movie, but in my opinion, largely CG has not gotten any better than the original Jurassic Park. It's still just, yep, there's some CG. There's a fancy-looking cartoon is what it amounts to for me. I did spot some rare animatronics used in the movie, but by and large, the CG is way overused in this movie. Plenty of action, but the CG-ness of it all and a lack of good build-up made it mostly boring for me. So I'm going to wrap this up. I want to talk about relevance briefly first. Is there anything of moral, spiritual significance in this movie that you know might trigger some thought or conversation in the course of watching it or thinking about it afterward? Maybe. There's two things I can think of. One is that the park owner at one point remarks that the secret to a happy life is realizing that you are not in control. And there's definitely some truth to that. I think that's one of the things that the Bible calls us to recognize is that, you know what? We are not in control. God is in control, and he works all things together for the good of those who believe in him and are called according to his purpose. I think that's Romans... Is that 8:1? There's like a few Romans verses I always get mixed up. Somebody can correct me in the comments. But that's that's a very basic idea is that, you know, we are not in control. God is in control. And Jesus talks about worrying and how worrying is not going to add a day to your life. No one's promised tomorrow and worrying is not going to extend your lifespan. There's no guarantees, you know. Preparing is one thing, but I mean like worrying and trying to seize control of your life is futile. So I thought that was a good observation that the park owner made. It's also interesting that the boys, I mentioned that their parents are in the midst of possibly a divorce. I mean, that's kind of what the boys suspect, but we don't really know for sure what the parents are thinking. The boys are getting letters from two different lawyers, so it's probably looking like divorce. And the jaded older brother is kind of like, yeah, whatever, that's just life, kid. And the younger boy is really broken, just broken over it. And I appreciated that. I appreciated that it wasn't like the Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, ending where it's, sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen Mrs. Doubtfire, where the parents don't get back together. And that was one of the first movies where that the ideal of maintaining marriage was kind of like they lowered the bar and said, you know what, we're just going to lower the bar because you can't always have that, and so we got to be realistic. This is how it is, but life can still be good, you know. Well, I think as long as, you know, we're dealing in the realm of fiction and stuff, that it's good more often than not to place an ideal for people to strive toward. And in the case of divorce, you know, it's sad. The older brother says, you know, like, all my friends are divorced, so whatever. That's just what, you know, what goes on in life, you know. Now you're gonna get two birthdays and two Christmases and all that stuff. And the younger kid in tears says, I don't want two birthdays and two Christmases. You know, he wants his parents to be together, you know. And I think we're lying to ourselves if we say that kids will be just as fine growing up in a divorced, you know, parent home than a healthy home where the parents have resolved those issues and they're fighting for their marriage to work. So anyway, I appreciated that kind of hope was that ideal was still kind of represented, and there was an acknowledged tragedy attached to the nature of divorce. Sorry. So okay, in summary, if I were a time traveler, I think a lot of people are going to like this movie. The theater was more full than it usually is when I go see movies, so I think a lot of people are seeing it. I think it's going to be successful. They'll probably churn out another one. Hopefully, they'll let us wait 14 years again. But if I were time travel, going back in time, talking to myself, I'd say, yeah, Pater, all those instincts you had about the trailer, they were right. I know you're really going to get your hopes up like you always do and try to be positive and open-minded, but you know what? Don't bother with that whole ritual of yours and just run far, far away from this movie. It will not surprise you in a positive way. It will just totally live up to your expectations based on the trailer. I mean, you know, the moment in the trailer that really sticks out to me that I think epitomizes this movie is, you know, that part in the trailer where, like, that massive dinosaur, it just jumps out of the water and just grabs that shark and eats it in one bite. I mean, that, I think, that dinosaur jumping to the shark really represents what this movie is all about. Okay, so it's rated PG-13 for intense sequences of science fiction violence and peril. For final score, I give it a quality of 6.5 out of 10. That's a D. It's a mid-range D. And a relevance score of 6.0 out of 10. That's like a D-. So I think you're really going to have to struggle to kind of have any kind of worthwhile thoughts spring to mind and be mulled over in your brain after seeing this movie. It's just not that kind of experience. So there you go. I want to remind you guys to check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the Untold podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com. Nice. Another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Pater. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold, you are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. Here I'm going to share my E3 2015 wish list. I'm really excited about E3 this year. I think it has a lot more potential than the last 2 years have had to really have some really exciting revelations of things that are coming up. I don't think I'm going to get anything that I want, but I'm still going to share my wish list with you. Now, this is just my wish list. It's not predictions. It's because I'm not smart enough for that. It's not like what I think companies should be doing because I'm not smart enough for that either. It's just me being selfish for a moment and like, oh boy, what would I really like for me? So I'll go roughly in order of like some of the main press conferences, at least the, well, I'm not going to get into like EA and all that stuff, but okay, well, let's get the obvious out of the way. And I got 39 things to get through, so we got to go fast. Obvious, Fallout 4, very excited for that. By the way, I'm recording this on Monday, June 8th, 2015, so if I miss any announcements that make my wishes, you know, irrelevant, and you want to shatter my dreams or say, you moron, what are you thinking, feel free to leave those in the comments. Maybe don't call me a moron, that would maybe hurt a little bit, but... So Fallout 4 has been announced, and we've seen the trailer now. So the exciting thing there is that, okay, this says to me they have got to show us in-depth gameplay and whatever innovations are going to be involved. I remember when they showed off Fallout 3 and the VATS system for the first time. And so I want kind of like a rundown of what's new about this version of Fallout. And I definitely want to see lots and lots of gameplay in Bethesda's stage show. And then I, of course, want a release date. I would like an October release date. I mean, I'd love for them to say, hey, boom, available now. But, you know, They're not going to do that. So I'm trying to be realistic with an October release date. It's probably going to be more like November. But anyway, and then the next thing I'd like Bethesda to announce is Skyrim New Vegas. And by that, I mean, you know, yes, it's unrealistic for us to expect another Elder Scrolls game to be ready to go, you know, over the next 12 months. But I think it's maybe possible that they had an Obsidian type studio. Obsidian's the studio that did the Fallout New Vegas. You know, it's just some kind of like outsourced studio working on another game, another Elder Scrolls game in the Skyrim engine that's not like another unnumbered part of the Elder Scrolls series, but would just be kind of like a, hey, here's something else that doesn't take as much work, but you can get just as much, if not more, enjoyment out of, as many people experienced with Fallout New Vegas, at least after all of the patches were done being made. So I would love another Elder Scrolls game in the Skyrim engine released on current gen, you know, PS4 and Xbox One consoles. I would also like PS4 ports and up-reses of Fallout 3 and New Vegas, as well as Elder Scrolls Oblivion and Skyrim. I don't think all of those are going to happen, but maybe some, maybe one. I don't know. We'll see. All right, moving on to Microsoft. For Microsoft, I'm not a Microsoft person anymore. I struggled to be one during the 360 era, played fantastic games on what I consider to be a crap console in terms of the hardware, because it just failed me and failed other people. It was terrible experience with that hardware. So they've lost me, but some stuff that they could do that would still just kind of, I don't know, tickle my funny bone or make it less agonizing to watch their conference would be no CG trailers. I'm so sick of seeing CG trailers that's like, you know, we got Scalebound and we got Phantom Dust, and I'm just like, what are these games? You had to do research on Phantom Dust to find out what this thing was going to be, and we still have no idea what Scalebound is going to be. You're wasting my time, whether it's Microsoft or anybody else, you are wasting my time showing me CG trailers. I have just seen too many E3s to get excited about CG trailers anymore. I'm like, show me gameplay, show me what this experience is going to be. Until then, you are wasting my time. CG trailers are lies. They are lies. All right. So yeah, I want gameplay footage and live demos. The next thing I want is continuing integrity and humility. I think that they realized that, ooh, man, they really made some mistakes with the launch of the Xbox One, and it was just kind of like a PR nightmare, and so I would love for them... Last year, I felt like they came with more humility and groundedness to E3, and I would love to see that trend kind of continue with them. I certainly don't think they're in a position to be bragging, what with the debacle of the Halo Master Chief Collection, which I didn't even play, but I know several people that were just really frustrated with that. So I would love for that just kind of sense of increased humility and integrity to come with them to the conference again this year. I think it will only serve them well. I would love for Microsoft to compete for RPG gamers. That's basically the only thing I play, and I would love for them to just kind of compete for that market. They've traditionally been more into like action and sports and more of like the casual jock gamer. I don't even know if that means anything, but that's kind of what I think of, is, you know, people who like, they buy Call of Duty and the next Madden and that's it. They're good for the year, you know? And I feel like a lot of times that's what Microsoft, you know, really is kind of like targeting. And I'd love for them to target, RPG gamers. and I'd love for them, again, to keep their focus on games. I think they might be tempted to get away from that, but don't do it, Microsoft. Show us games. And then keep the HoloLens brief if you deal with that at your conference. Maybe you'll do that at the PC game show or something, or I don't know. I'm just afraid that this year is going to be too much VR. I'll get to that a little bit later. But the HoloLens, of all the VR options, I think is the most interesting to me, and I think it has the most potential to actually be something that will work and live up to its expectations. It's just kind of a different type of thing than what the other guys are doing, and so I am a little bit curious, but I don't want time given to tech demos and new peripherals and crap like that. No Kinect at all. Leave it behind. You know, if Kinect was working, and I've heard that it's kind of hard of hearing and not working so great, but if Kinect was working, then a great purpose for Kinect or other, you know, would be the voice command stuff. Same with Sony, you know, voice command. What I would love is to play an RPG like Fallout or Skyrim, not with a voiced protagonist. I think that that's kind of like a cheap way to try to add production value or something. No, what I would like is to have those dialogue interactions where you get those four options, and then I choose one by speaking it out loud as my character, and then the game responds, and you know, to the choice I've made, and the dialogue continues. So there's this honest verbal back and forth going on between me and the game in a role playing game, especially if you're doing the Bethesda zoom in first person perspective. Then I'm talking to this person on the screen. That seems to me like a good use of Kinect and these other kind of peripherals that just focus on voice commands and motion capture. The motion control, forget it. It's just not happening. It's just not happening. Try it again in 10 years, okay? let's see here. What else we got? So that's it for Microsoft. Okay, moving on to... I do want Microsoft to be competitive. I should say that. I don't want them to fail. I don't wish failure on anybody at these conferences. So I want them to be competitive enough to benefit me as a Sony guy, because that'll make Sony be more competitive and serve their players a little bit better. So, Microsoft, be good, but just not too good, okay? all right, Sony. I want PS4 ports of the Fallout games, of the Elder Scrolls, of the Mass Effect trilogy, of Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age Awakening. I don't care about Dragon Age 2. That whole series just went down the pooper after Dragon Age Awakening. I'll take all of those PS4 ports and up-reses. That would be really cool. Let's see here. What else? Oh, No Man's Sky. I'd like a 2015 release date, or even better, because I think what I heard was that the head of the development team was like, we are not going to talk about this project anymore until it is released, or maybe ready for release or something like that. So I would love, this would be a showstopper, for him to come out on stage and say, hey, remember how we said we weren't going to talk about it until it's released? Available now. Boom! That would be awesome. I don't think that's going to happen. There's no way I'm going to get that wish, but... that would be cool. Let's see here. But at the very least, I want a 2015 release date. Come on, guys. I'm very fascinated with what that game might be doing. I want to be able to play Vita games on my PS4. You can play PS4 games on your Vita through, like, this remote, you know, streaming type thing. Like, even if you just have an internet connection. I actually just tested this. We were away in California, and I took my Vita, which I just bought two or three months ago, and I took it, and I was able to, not super well all the time. It just depends on the internet connection at the two locations that you're at. If you both have strong, reliable internet connections, you're probably going to be good. But if either one fails, then that's one variable too many that falls apart. But I was able to play some of a PS4 game in California with my PS4 turned on here at home in Arizona. That was pretty nifty. But I would like to be able to... I'd like to be able to play Vita games on my PS4. I think that would be really cool and really add a lot of value to the Vita, which I think already has a lot of value. Let's see here. Although I do hear that console, people are suspecting that Sony's kind of giving up on the Vita. It's seeing its last days. You know, I don't know. Yeah, there's nothing you can really do about that, I guess. But it would be cool on the way out to see some really cool added functionality for that handheld. I would like to see a return of Snowblind games on the PlayStation Network. Now, I'm talking about the ones for PS2, like Champions of Norrath, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 1 and 2, the Justice League Heroes, the action RPG. All of these were great. In their day, they were kind of, when they first came out, called Diablo clones. They have a lot in common with the classic Diablo games. But I love them. In fact, I prefer to play that kind of game with a gamepad versus pointing and clicking with a mouse, and I feel like that whole genre has kind of dried up, and they're not really making those games anymore, and so I would love to see those games made available on PSN, just so I could play them slightly up-resed on my PS4. That would be really cool. But you know, I'm not going to get that. I'm not going to get that. And that's why I'm kind of frustrated with the whole PlayStation Now thing, because really, in order to get those games on PlayStation Now, I imagine that you have to renew the licenses and all that kind of stuff. What I really want, which they're never going to give me, even though there was a rumor a year and a half ago that it was going to happen, what I really want is backwards compatibility on the PlayStation 4 for PS2. I have a great library of PS2 games. That was one of the greatest generations of console gaming. And, you know, when my PS2 eventually conks out, that's going to be the end of it, unless I can find another one. But they're not really making them anymore. Yeah, they're not making them anymore. And they're going to be harder and harder to find all the time. Oh, man, I want to preserve those games. I want to go back to them. I still am playing PS2 games. I'm coming back to them still, you know? We just really love for that to happen. PS2 backwards compatibility. Because, I mean, that's the only way you're going to be able to do, like, licensed games. Like, if there's some game that was based on a property, like a comic book property or a movie property, granted, those are usually crap games, but occasionally there are these little gems. Like, for example, Justice League Heroes, which I really loved on the PS2. If they were to, you know, get that on the PlayStation Network, I mean, it's on. You can play it on the Vita, but it's not the same. I've got it on the Vita. It's not the same. You know, you have to do stuff monkeying with licenses, and I just want backwards compatibility. All right. No virtual reality. Can I please see none of the Morpheus? Can you just put that out on, like, your stage, like, on the floor, on the show floor, so people can do demos? And I don't want to hear about it, because that's, you can't show that off, really, in a press conference. It's just going to be a bunch of pipe dreams and CG trailer type stuff. And by that, I mean just stuff that is a bunch of lies. Because until I'm wearing that headset, I'm just looking at the big screen version of it, which isn't, has very little relevance to the experience you're going to have. So, yeah, and I just think that technology, this first generation, I'm convinced, this first generation of VR technology that comes out over the course of the next year or whatever it is just going to be crap. It's going to have all kinds of problems, and it's going to be 2, 3, 4 generations before they really work the kinks out so that it's an intuitive, non-pukey experience or whatever. There's just going to be stuff that's wrong with it that people are not going to like. So I don't even want to hear about it until you've mastered the technology. Until then, you're wasting my time. All right, moving on to Nintendo. They got Mario Maker coming out, which I guess is going to be one of their big releases in the fall. But to me, it's like, okay, Mario Maker, that's an okay concept, but freaking Zelda Maker. Oh my gosh, they need to announce that. They're not going to announce it because it would kind of, you know, take the wind out of the fire out of, I don't know, whatever the metaphor is I'm looking for. It would do something to diminish Mario Maker. So probably for marketing reasons, even if they're working on a Zelda Maker, they're not going to talk about it at this E3, but I want them to. I want them to talk. I don't want them to just mention that their plans in the future include a Zelda Maker. Not that it would make me buy a Nintendo console. I just really think that's a cool idea. All right, what else? You know what? I want to see signs, either because they're wising up or because they're, I'd rather, you know, I don't wish harm on any companies. I don't wish any companies to fail. But I would love to see signs of Nintendo moving into a software-only business future. Already, they're taking their properties, not their previously published games, but their properties, their IPs, to mobile gaming. That's coming soon. They've announced that, and they're working on that, you know. I think that's the first sign that they're going to be open to putting their properties on other consoles, on other platforms, you know? And I would love for Nintendo to eventually just go all the way and just be making Mario games for Xbox and Sony and stuff like that. Of course, that might be really hard for them to do, because Nintendo historically has been, like, really difficult to work with third parties. They've been very, very restrictive and stuff in what they would allow. You know, going back to the original NES, very restrictive on what they would allow and on their console. And, you know, they just, apparently they're very difficult to work with if you're a third party wanting to publish on their console. And so if they eventually became a software-only developer, that would be an interesting and ironic turn of the tables. So I think they're probably going to fight that with all their might. There's a lot of pride over there in traditional Japan. So that might be really tough. We'll see. Let's see here. I would love for them to change their YouTube policies, because right now they just make it really difficult for anybody to make videos of Nintendo properties on YouTube channels, like Let's Plays or just kind of doing reviews of their games, you know. They've been very kind of stingy and with that kind of stuff. I mean, they've had every right to do that legally. So I'm not like saying, you know, like, oh, yeah. I'm just thinking, you know. And I'm not even saying that they're being immoral, you know, kind of like wanting to get a certain cut. So maybe stingy is an unfair word. I would just love them to make choices that are a little bit more friendly and less obviously, you know, profit-focused with YouTube and how people share their experiences of Nintendo games with other people. And also to be brief with amiibos. I feel like Nintendo for a while has kind of been trapped in a corner, like, we see that we're failing, so we've just got to grab money wherever we can. So we're going to take as much as we can from people making YouTube videos. Oh, amiibos. Okay, we're going to sell people a bunch of crap toys that don't do anything, but we're going to market them and say that they do. I don't know. I have no experience with it. It's just what I've heard, is that they don't really compare to, say, the Skylanders toys, which are much more interactive with consoles and games than the Amiibos are. But right now, it's from a distance, it just looks like lots of money grabbing and not really innovating and staying in touch with, you know, what gamers are interested, what kind of experiences gamers are interested in having. So, okay, Nintendo, we'll see what you got in store for us. All right, the only wish that I have for the PC conference is no filler. I know that's not going to happen because it's 3 hours long. I don't see how they can possibly do a three-hour event like that when these other conferences are like usually what, 1-2 hours max? 1 hour and 45 minutes, I think, is how long some of them that they usually last. But geez Louise, 3 hours on your first time out of the door. Oh, good luck. Yeah, I don't want music. I don't want celebrities. I don't want funny people making jokes and sitting around with their blah, 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 blah commentary. You know, I do too much of that myself. I don't want to listen to other people doing it. So, yeah, being very selfish here. But I'm still going to watch it. All right, moving on. Just in general, my wishes for other games and properties and people making stuff. I want Bioshock 4. Can we please have Bioshock 4? I know that Ken Levine and the folks at Irrational is kind of like disbanded, and Ken Levine's now doing his own thing, and so it would be a different creative team and not the original masterminds, you know, of the first three, you know. But Infinite, Bioshock Infinite, kind of was, people had mixed feelings about it. Some people loved it, some people hated it, and stuff like that. So, you know, I think we're ready for maybe a new take on it anyway, or just in a slightly different direction or something, different focus. I don't know. But I just want more like that. When I discovered Bioshock at last year's Extra Life event, that was like mind-blowing for me because I suck at hand-eye coordination. And here was like this kind of action shooter type game that on the easy level, it was easy enough for me to get through. And it still stressed me out, and I had a great time, and there was a whole great world to explore, so I got a lot of that kind of RPG type experience without the frustration that comes from, you know, sucking at action games as I do so badly. So I would love another Bioshock 4. And if I can't get Bioshock 4, which I'm not going to get, that's unrealistic. I'm not going to get Bioshock 4. Give me Singularity 2. One of the original creators of Singularity 2 tweeted that we're going to go, he said, going back to Katorga 12, I think, in his tweet or something like that. And people have been like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean like a Singularity port to current gen consoles? Or does that mean Singularity 2? I would love Singularity 2. I would love that. That would be oh, cool. If you haven't played Singularity, go check it out. If you're a Bioshock fan, go check it out. Yeah, at the time it came out, they put virtually no money into the marketing, so it kind of went under the radar. Some of the people that did see it were like, oh, this is a Bioshock ripoff or whatever, but you know what? If you're in the position now where you're like, man, I wish there was more Bioshock, I have no Bioshock to play, and you haven't played Singularity, go play it. Go check it out. Yes, it is in many ways a Bioshock ripoff, but it's a great Bioshock ripoff. So, definitely check it out. I want Singularity 2. And then if I can't get kind of a new story shooter, then I'll just take a more story-oriented type game like Everybody's Gone to Rapture. Very curious about this game. Very curious about, you know, how this the idea of Rapture, which is really from the Bible, is kind of entering people's consciousness and awareness of this concept. And you see a lot of misunderstanding about the Rapture and what it is. And this, I don't think, is going to at all be like a representation of the biblical rapture. They're just kind of using that word and pulling it out of, you know, the collective consciousness of America or whatever. But I'm really curious to see what it is that they're going to do with that. And I think at the very least it'll kind of stimulate conversation about the concept of rapture, about the book of Revelation, which I think a lot of people just kind of like have crazy, people love to quote it and love to, you know, come up with crazy interpretations of it. And I think that comes from this idea that like it's symbolic, so it just could mean anything. But really, if you look at the genre that it's written in, if you look at the scripture that it references, you know, it's really not that difficult. There may be some timetable things that are, you know, a little bit murky, but in terms of like what the events it's describing, the things that it's projecting that are going to happen, it's really a lot clearer than we kind of, you know, make it out to be the way we talk about it. But that's a whole different kind of biblical interpretation thing I'm not going to get into now. But anyway, what do we got here? Oh, yeah. And also, speaking of story games and speaking of the Bible, this is kind of a slightly rough segue. That Dragon Cancer. Now, not everyone may know, but this game, which has been getting a lot of buzz the last several PAX conferences and one or two E3s, this is a small independent game made by a man and his wife, and it's about their sons, they're like a toddler age, or very, very young, his struggle with cancer, which he ultimately succumbed to. And this game, which is still in development, is about that struggle, you know, about their family specifically. I mean, it's like they're putting their experience in video game form and inviting you in to experience that. People have really just had strong emotional reactions to just the demos and just the available, you know, levels, I guess, that are available now. I think it's really going to be interesting to see what a game like that means for video games in the future and how they're perceived and how they are developed and conceptualized from the beginning. But I think it's also going to be a really cool potential for just the hope of the gospel to kind of just be put on display. Because the reference to that dragon cancer is equating it to the great dragon of the Bible, Satan, and how this is, you know, this has been a spiritual battle for them, you know. And so anyway, I want to see more of that game. They've been quiet on their website for about the last 6 months. They had a Kickstarter thing, and I think that succeeded. And the last thing they stated was summer 2015. No, that's Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. But I think 2015 was the release window that they had. And so I would love to hear more about the game. I'd love to hear that it's going to be released soon. Okay, but maybe I won't get that. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff going on in their lives, obviously. But maybe I'll get some Mass Effect 4 gameplay and a release window. I don't want what we got last year, which was just these little snapshots and teases, and don't waste my time with it. I want gameplay. I want a release date. Release window. Release month. I'll give you release month. That's not too much to ask for. Yes, it is. Crap. Okay. I'm not going to get that. What I'm probably going to get instead, especially at the EA thing, is lots of Star Wars. Boy, this is the summer of Star Wars. Everyone's getting all excited about Star Wars coming out in December. Oh my gosh, Star Wars, Star Wars. I think everybody's going to try and come up with a Star Wars property, Star Wars related DLC. People, I am afraid there's going to be like just a Star Wars craze taking up way too much time all over the place at E3, and I'm just like, Star Wars has its own conference. It has multiple conferences, I'm sure of it. So please let Star Wars do their own things at their own conference. I am so over Star Wars. I know I'm going to get a lot of crap for that. I'm just over it. I watched the original trilogy again, a couple of months ago, and I was like, man, these just really don't hold up. Historically, I get what they meant to the entire creative industry, let alone movies. But I mean, like, man, Star Wars had huge impact, and we have, you know, a lot to thank George Lucas for. But I can't watch them anymore. I just can't do it. Not fun, not cool, cheesy, boring, I don't know what it is. Too many Ewoks and flibbertidoos. What's the dude's name from the first movie? Jar Jar. Oh, man, I worked so hard to burn that name out of my memory. Moving on. All right, I want a Saints Row 5. Can we get that? That would be awesome. I just discovered the Saints Row games a little while ago. Not for everybody. I cannot recommend these games to very many people. Just because they've got they've got F-bombs all over the place. They've got some crass content in them that as believers we certainly, you know, don't want to be like imitating in our day-to-day lives, you know. I could get into a discussion about, you know, what we as believers have the freedom to interact and like, you know, take in terms of like witnessing what content we can witness, you know, and video, that's a whole different conversation. But I think absolutely believers can play Saints Row games. I would love to see a Saints Row 5. I just finished Saints Row 5. I'm on the DLC Get Out of Hell now. It's all right. But man, the Saints Row 3 and 4 were great. Did I say I just finished Saints Row 5? I just finished Saints Row 4. Anyway, having a blast. But I don't think I'm going to get those because they were part of THQ, and THQ totally dissolved, and I think somebody did rescue them, but I can't remember who or if for sure or what's going on with that studio. But I would love for them to be making another Saints Row game right now and just kind of like reboot, relaunch, reinvigorate that whole franchise. Me likey, me want morey. But I'm not going to get that. So instead, give me a Justice League action RPG because I would... Geez... Volition. I think those are the guys that that made Saints Row. Make a Justice League action RPG. Use your same engine and just let me play as Justice League heroes or just in the DC universe. Yes, I know there's DC Universe Online. It's not the same. It's an MMO and I can smell MMO all over it when I play it. And sometimes I can play it and it's fun, but I can still smell the MMO everywhere. I don't want to smell the MMO. Just give me that superhero open world experience. Give it to me in the Saints Row engine if you must, or innovate and give me something different. Come on, that'd be awesome. But I'm not going to get that. So instead, give me a new Snowblind action RPG. I think that studio's dead and gone, but somebody put it back together and announced that they're together at E3, and they've got an awesome new top-down action RPG. That would just be phenomenal. The last one that they made was a Lord of the Rings kind of like IP-based game, which really didn't do well, and I think that was just kind of like the death warrant on that studio. But I would love for more games like the ones they made, or somebody to get those creative types or some of the key ones together again to make another action RPG in that mold. That would be awesome. All right, but I'm not going to get that. So instead, give me a Kingdoms of Amalur sequel. Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning. I really enjoyed this game, which is so sad because that studio is totally dissolved now as well. But it was received very well by a lot of people. I think it even sold really well, but it just wasn't enough to make up the money that they spent on it. But I think it's EA that still owns all of that entire property and all those assets. And so I'm just like, guys, you've got this system in place. Just like maybe upscale the graphics, but keep all the same systems and the combat systems and all that stuff. Just keep it in place and just give me more of that, but on current gen consoles. Oh man, just feels like maybe that, you know, that wouldn't take a ton of work to give us another one of those, and like it would be really well received. Okay, but I'm not going to get that. Instead, we're getting Final Fantasy 15. So what I want for Final Fantasy 15 is a big Square Enix Just Kidding announcement. I want them to come and say, hey, you know all that footage and that whole demo and stuff that we released that said, hey, this is Final Fantasy 15? Just kidding. It's not going to be that at all. Sorry that for the last 15 years we've been getting on the bandwagon of, oh man, we need our games to be more twitchy, and we need them to be faster paced, and we need them to be more like Western games. No. No. I want them to go back to turn-based, even if they want to keep that active time battle system, which I wasn't a big fan of. I guess I could probably get into it now. But I'd love them to do something like Shadow Hearts, where there is like this kind of brief hand-eye coordination element that's in the combat somewhere, but it's not like blazing fast all over the place, like, oh, I'm freaking out, this is too fast for me. I can't deal with it. And they've just gone more and more and more in that real time and now straight up action game direction. And I'm just like, guys, you are not playing to your strengths. You're not playing to what I think your core fan base really wants. I think the core fan base really wants a return to something more along the lines of turn-based. It may not have to be directly turn-based, but man, Final Fantasy 13, first Final Fantasy game I didn't finish. I did not finish that game. I hated it. Hated it. But I'm not going to get that. So give me a Final Fantasy 12 HD remaster. Because that, I initially hated that combat system, but it grew on me. And I think as I went on and played games like Neverwinter Nights and Baldur's Gate and Dragon Age Origins, you know, this kind of like, not turn-based, but like real-time, but with the ability to pause and play, you know, like what Obsidian made with Pillars of Eternity and what BioWare made with the original Dragon Age Origins. That's, if you like those kinds of games, like the pause and play, and you also would like to have a much more sophisticated and customizable AI than you were offered in Dragon Age Origins, or certainly Baldur's Gate, or certainly Dragon Age Inquisition. Oh my gosh, go back, give that one a try. Especially if you didn't like it at the time. Give it another shot if you've since then liked some of these other games that have pause and play real-time RPG combat. Give it a try. Oh my gosh. We got this 10 and 10.2 HD remaster. That's the first Final Fantasy game I finished but did not keep. I still have all my other Final Fantasy games from the entire series that were released in the US. I've got them all. Didn't keep 10, and that's the one that gets the HD remaster. But I want 12. But I'm not going to get that. So instead, you know what? Just give me a Sword Coast Legends release date and specs. Have you seen this game? You probably haven't. It's been kind of off the radar quite a bit. But this is like, it's from the director of the original Dragon Age Origins. So if you like Dragon Age Origins, but kind of feel like the series went to crap after that, like I do, this game is from the director of Dragon Age Origins. And if you look at the trailer, it's got like, it's pausable real-time combat. It's like what I love about, say, Neverwinter Nights, or Neverwinter Nights 2. Although, frankly, I kind of like it better when there's just one main guy and you're just kind of setting up complex AIs for the rest of your party, but you're just directly controlling one. But anyway, oh man, I'm very excited to learn more about this game, see what it is, but I'm not primarily a PC gamer. I don't make any effort to keep my video cards and stuff like that up to date, and so, you know, there's only a short season where I can kind of a few years play PC games, and then I have to wait a few years until my current PC or laptop dies, and then I upgrade, and then, hey, I can play some more of the newer games. But anyway, I want a release date, and I want specs, so I can start wondering if I'll be able to play this one or not. Just in general, if you couldn't tell, what I want from E3 is RPGs. I want RPGs all over the place. I want turn-based. I want action. Maybe even tactical. But I think especially action and, like, turn-based with some kind of, like, a hand-eye coordination component that's very minor, but just adds a little bit of intensity to the experience. All right, what else? The Division, speaking of like action RPGs, is it an RPG? I don't know. We've seen some stuff. Is it an MMO? Maybe. I don't know. I don't want it to be an MMO. It could be an MMO, but I want to have a single player experience that's possible without anybody interrupting my game, because I don't want to talk to that little 12-year-old that's had to take out the garbage one too many times, so he's going to take it out on me, and he spends all night and day learning how to master these games, so it's going to be really easy to kick the crap out of me. Or if you look at, like, DC Universe Online, I went there, and like, a bunch of jerks were standing in the doorway, and I couldn't get to the little teleporter pad. They were just upset with the world, and they're just like, we're going to stand in the doorway so no one can get through here, and they're just being really stupid. Even though they couldn't fight with you, they could disrupt your game that way, and I hate MMOs. I don't want any MMOs. I don't want The Division to be an MMO. I want it to be some kind of cool action RPG, and if possible, hey, with a possible real-time combat, that'd be awesome. Okay, moving on. No CG trailers. Have I said that yet? I don't want any CG trailers. You're wasting my time. Gameplay footage and live demos. And just in general, I want transparency. I want integrity from these guys. I want people to acknowledge their missteps, and I want them to fulfill their promises. I know that's a lot to ask, and I know I'm not going to get that, but man, wouldn't that be great? Let's see here. I want no gimmicks and no trend chasing. Right now, it's a little bit too late with VR. Everyone's on the VR bandwagon, so it's a little too late to right that boat. But man, I would love it if we had no gimmicks and no trend chasing. Please, please, just give me games that play to their strengths. All right. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I just kind of want entertainment. I know that's kind of cheap and shallow for me to say. I just kind of want to be entertained. You know? And again, I don't wish anybody to fail. Sometimes, you know, there is a lot of water cooler conversation to be had, you know, when someone like the head of Xbox says, well, yeah, if you want a console that does not require internet connectivity, we have one for you. It's called the Xbox 360. But you're kind of out of luck if you're going to play the Xbox One, you know. You know, I don't wish for, like, horrible, horrible fumbles like that to be made. They do give us something to talk about, you know. But I would love for other things that aren't, like, going to harm these companies that would still give us things to talk about. Just audacious claims and mic-dropping moments, you know. Or fumbles that aren't going to hurt the company, but that would just be and that people can react well to in the moment. But it'll just remind us, you know what? These are all people. They're all humans. They're all working these jobs, trying to do their best because their jobs are on the line with all these products. So I don't wish harm to anyone. I just want humanity and entertainment. That would be awesome.
Incoming transmission.
This week, I got an email from Ross who writes, Peter, I've been listening to the Spirit Blade Underground podcast for a few years now, and it continues to equip, encourage, and inspire me. Is that the right order? Does the order matter? So, mission accomplished, truly. Loving the content and all the work at SB and CGC by you and others. Keep up the good work. God bless, Ross. Thank you very much, Ross. Ross is one of the, not quite handful of people that have listened to the show or at one time or another. That I did not know before doing the podcast, before meeting them, you know, through the as a result of them listening to the podcast. One of the few among that number that I've actually met in person. He was in town, gosh, it was maybe a year ago now, and was able to come from the military base that he was serving at the time and make the drive out, and so we met at Starbucks, and that was awesome. Ross still means a lot to me as I think back on it, and I really appreciate the encouragement. Guys, I'm such a
stinking insecure, sensitive artiste. That it's really nice to hear from you guys when something that we're doing here at Christian Geek Central or on the podcast is useful or helpful or fun or whatever. It helps affirm that, okay, yeah, I should keep doing this, you know. I have no plans on quitting. I mean, that's not what I mean. But anyway, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line, I really shouldn't care what people think about me. That's what I'm trying to train myself in. But it still feels good when people give me a pat on the back. So thank you very much, Ross. Glad we could be useful to you. Okay, so guys, yeah, I want more feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind that you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? And despite what I said, you know, give me the stuff that you would like to be different. If there's something that you don't like or something that you feel is missing, I do want to hear that stuff, you know. So yeah, at the end of the day, we just want to make this show, Christian Geek Central, all of it as fun, as useful as we can. And to do that, it would really be helpful to hear from you. So you can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Oh, hang on one second here. I keep forgetting to mention, it's just because I keep forgetting to copy and paste it into my notes. Another way that you can send us feedback is to contact Tim O'Donnell. Tim O'Donnell is the general administrator, actually, of Christian Geek Central. At this point, you know, we're kind of transitioning so that I will be kind of overseeing kind of the vision of it. But as far as like how things are carried out and stuff like that, more and more of that is in the hands of Tim O'Donnell as we move forward here. So you can reach Tim at ChristianGeekCentral@gmail.com, which I'm like 87% to 96% sure that's true what I just said. Not about him being the general admin, but the email address. I'm almost positive that's Tim. Just let me know if I got that wrong. Otherwise, give it a shot. ChristianGeekCentral@gmail.com. All right. Let's see here. If you haven't been to Christian Geek Central in a little while, there's really just a growing number of posts that are appearing there that are not from me or not my thoughts and blah, blah, blabberings. For example, Winston Crutchfield gave us in the month of May a pen and paper RPG scan where he highlighted some cool RPGs that are being published out there. And like paper and pencil, like hardcore old school, like sitting at a table with paper, pencil, eraser, and really funky, awesome dice. And well, maybe not all with dice, but anyway. So if you're into that kind of stuff, be sure and check out that post by Winston in the May posts of ChristianGeekCentral.com. Also, I've started making a habit of subscribing to the newsletters for both Splashdown Books and Enclave Publishing, which are the two basically, you know, almost lone Christian geek fiction publishers right now. So I want to try and keep you guys in the loop of what they're going on so that you can be connected to those kinds of efforts and support the ones that you think are worth supporting so that hopefully as a whole we can see the industry grow and improve and become more artistic and skillful and excellent and really get the place and the usefulness in the kingdom of God that I think it really could have if people would be open to it. So anyway, if you're into sci-fi, fantasy, horror, Enclave doesn't publish horror, but Splashdown, I believe, still does. So you can get updates on what's going on from the Christian world of storytelling in novel form from ChristianGeekCentral.com. And then also, guys, I'm still very interested in your Summer of Free suggestions. If you have any for me, we're kind of in the thick of the Summer of Free right now, and I would love to have stuff to share with you that I have not found myself. And what else? Oh, yeah, I want to remind you guys about Agape Geek Out this month, which we are pooling our efforts as part of Operation Compassion. If you go to agapegeekout.com, A-G-A-P-E, geekout.com, you'll get all the information there on what an Agape Geek Out is and what Operation Compassion is. Basically, it's just getting together with some people and doing some nerdy fun stuff you were going to do anyway, but just a little bit more on purpose to raise funds and awareness for Compassion International this month. And I hope to get a lot of participation. You know, this events like these, it's not about anybody donating like a huge amount of money or anything like that. You know, it's just about a lot of people getting involved on a small level to kind of just kind of, and I don't know what I'm saying. I should stick to the script, Peter. But there's nothing in the script, so I'm just winging it here. Anyway, go to agapegeekout.com for more on that. And also, I'm doing a live stream of my Agape Geek Out for Operation Compassion this Saturday. So if you get the podcast early enough, you may have not missed it. Saturday, June 13th, 2015, from 9 a.m. to midnight Pacific time. If you go to twitch.tv/ChristianGeekCentral, I also plan to embed the stream, the live stream, at ChristianGeekCentral.com. Either one of those places, you should be able to go to watch me playing video games for 15 hours. As I have other people over at my house and hopefully set up a bunch of TVs and all of us have a bunch of fun playing video games and donating a little bit to Compassion and raising some awareness to that ministry. So my preference would not be that you... I am going to put like a donation link on the stream, but my preference would be that you... that if you're going to do something, host your own Agape Geek Out. Just invite one or two friends over, something like that. Say, hey... you know, hey, why don't we get together? You know how we do this every week. Why don't we do this? But everybody brings $5 this time, and then we donate that to Operation Compassion, and that would be awesome. That would be awesome if just like you and two or three people that you know just chip in $5 for this. And if like everybody did that, if a whole bunch of people did that, man, that could be something really cool. And who knows, it could end up being something even bigger if you know more people and want to organize something a little bit larger scale. You know, it'd be awesome. It'd be awesome. So. Anyway, again, Agape Geek Out, Operation Compassion. Go check it out. And then the live stream, of course, this Saturday, if you haven't missed it already. If you have, then at some point in the future when I get around to it, it took me forever with the Extra Life Marathon. This one's a little shorter, so it might not take as long, but it'll probably still be a while. I'll probably do an edited down, like, highlights version eventually at some point. But I would still love it if you stopped by and said hi, which hopefully I will see. It's hard to keep track of what's going on in the chat while I'm playing video games at the same time. So if you just want to stop by and make fun of me and how bad I suck at video games, you could totally get away with it. at least, you know, at about a 20 to 15 minute delay. I don't know. It depends on how often I'm able to glance over there. Okay, blah, 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 blah. I've talked about that way too much. So if you go to the YouTube channel this week, there's a promo for Operation Compassion that I've made really short and concise, so hopefully you guys can use that as a tool to kind of share the concept with other people. If you are like, I don't know how I'm going to explain this to people, we'll just send them this, like, this 90-second, 2-minute video that can explain the basics and then say, okay, hey, we're going to do a movie night, you know, for this, or whatever. Let's see, I've also put up a Summer of Free website tour. I think you already saw that, probably. I think I announced that. I think these are old notes. Oh, geez. All right, I'm running out of steam here, so I got to get through this script. I've been working my butt off trying to figure out, like, streaming stuff again. There's been a lot less work this time for prep for the stream than there was for Extra Life. Extra Life prep was like... 3 weeks I was working out the kinks of streaming, and it was just, oh man. And this, I'm just trying to refine my settings a little bit, trying to boost the overall volume. I know that was a bit of an issue last time, so I'm going to try and remedy that. I think I've got that one figured out. There's some, yeah, anyway, blah blah blah. So I'm pretty spent. So and I got other stuff to catch up on too. So what? I want your voice to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. Whether you have an idea for a segment already or just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. It's also a great way to promote what you're doing. If you'd like for more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.net or Tim O'Donnell, theoretically, at christiangeekcentral@gmail.com. Oh, man, I really hope that's a real email address. Anyway, I want to thank Ross for writing in and sending me that bit of encouragement and feedback. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma, guys, after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'm going to be talking a whole lot about E3. My plan is actually leading up to... well, I don't know if it'll happen, if I'll be able to post in the back half of next week, or if those videos will go up the next week, but I'm hoping to post, you know, at least 2 videos, maybe 3. I don't know how many this might end up being. But I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with incorporating, like, you know, over-the-shoulder video game footage relevant to what I'm talking about, which you'll notice in my wish list video for E3 that I put video over the shoulder, over my shoulder, in regarding many of the things that I'm talking about in that wish list. So if you're curious, you know, about what you heard in the podcast today and you want to check that out, That's totally the video that I forgot to promote in the video promotion part of my script. So you go to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, you'll be able to see that whole video. It's already up. It went up before this podcast went up. And so if you want to see video of all the stuff that I'm talking about, you can check it out there. Anyway, I'm hoping to do more of that. As far as like talking about E3 this year, so keep an eye on that YouTube channel as well. Once again, the stream, if you're not too late, is this Saturday the 13th, 9 a.m. to midnight Pacific, at twitch.tv/ChristianGeekCentral. Till then, or next week, or whenever it is you hear me blabbering at you again, I hope you check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central to find more stuff that we're making just for you. Thanks so much for making time for the show, guys. I do hope that you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Peter Frenson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, was that episode 312, season 3 of Farscape, Meltdown? I'm not sure of the numbers, but Meltdown is definitely the name of the episode. So when this episode started, this is the one where it's about the group on town, and they're getting sucked into a nearby sun, and there are two aliens involved in this. One, Sierjna, seems to be the victim of another creature, lava guy. Can't remember his name. But she seems to be like the victim and is trying to get away from him, and she's just weird and has a man's receding hairline. It's really strange. I really don't like Sierjna. She just makes me feel icky or something. I don't know, not icky, annoyed. Annoyed, yeah, because she's kind of a drama queen, and she fits really well with Stark. And unfortunately, this is a Stark-heavy episode if you're not a fan of Stark. But there are some great moments in it, despite, you know, whatever elements that I don't like. But anyway, oh my gosh, I'm tired. I shouldn't do this when I'm tired. But there's no other time, so you're getting it like it is. I mean, I don't watch or enjoy an episode like this for the main story. I enjoy it for the character moments and for the character subplots. And in this one, it's all about John and Aaron and how the mist that is being produced by Talon in response to his situation or something, blah, 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 blah. It's like making them just kind of really aroused and wanting to have sex with each other, you know? But we see in that, you know, even though the mist is having this effect on them, you know, we see here and there just some of their natural feelings coming to the surface more, especially with Aaron. You know, John's, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, but Aaron doesn't. And so a device like this kind of helps us gauge where are they at in the relationship. And they're really, you know, they're about as committed as I suppose a secular couple is going to get at this point. I think that they're probably committed to each other in the way they've said the love, the big L word, I love you, which, like, in secular circles, for some reason, that is really, really huge. Like, there's just a huge delay, and it's monumental when, you know, someone says that, and so they can be dating for years and not say I love you, you know, so, So, you know, by the gauge of, you know, what I think this, where this show is coming from, I think it's a big deal for them to say that they love each other. What else? This is going to be kind of all over the place and out of chronological order, but, you know, as annoying as Stark is, there was this great moment at near the end where, you know, John is pleading with Stark to allow Talon, because he kind of gets linked up to Talon,
to allow Talon to turn away from the sun. You know, Stark is just kind of giving up and despairing. Oh, we're all going to die. There is no hope. And John reminds him of Zan and how much he loved Zan, and basically says, you know, Aaron is my Zan, and you are killing my Zan right now. And it was just a really moving moment, you know, because as much as Stark annoys me, I have at this point bought into his love and adoration of Zan. And so to see that kind of light bulb turn on and the horrified realization that Stark has that he would be killing the person that is for someone else, Zan, you know. That was a good moving moment. There was some other like funny moments, you know, with the mist affecting people. Krace was getting really just power mad and like barking orders, you know, as if he's a peacekeeper captain, you know. And there's this moment where he's confronting Aaron and he's like, you know, she's not obeying his orders, so he's calling her a mutineer, and he's like, if you do not obey my orders right now, I will shoot you as a mutineer. She doesn't even say anything. She just raises his eyebrows like, seriously, are you kidding me right now? Okay, well, bye. She just turns around and just kind of chuckles and just laughs and walks away. That was a great moment. And John is still kind of calling out the sci-fi tropes as he encounters them, you know, talking about like, oh man, I'll take a critter any day over a godlike alien. I hate godlike aliens, you know, which is kind of what the lava guy was in this episode. Although not, you know, I wouldn't put him quite in the category of godlike alien, because he was, you know, very unkillable, but it's not like he could bring about all kinds of results. And like Maldus could totally manipulate reality, you know. He's like a Q, you know. So by comparison, I guess I don't think of this villain as a godlike alien, you know. I wish that kind of moment with John kind of identifying a character as that, as a trope, I wish it would have fit that trope a little bit more, for so that his dialogue would just be, you know, just a little bit more on the nose. I think it would have been funnier. Stark looked just a little bit ridiculous when we first, you know, see him plugged up to all those wires from, you know, connecting him to Talon. And he, you know, rises up and he's kind of floating back and forth. And I don't know if it was kind of like the way his legs were hanging. It was probably part of that. You know, I think when they put people in those wire harnesses, there's something that naturally causes their legs to kind of bow outward. And it just looks a little bit ridiculous. But it's probably painful, maybe more so for men, I don't know, to keep your legs closer together, you know, when you've got these harness things, you know, right inside your crotch there. Who knows, you know, what's going on down there. But it just seems like legs tend to bow outward when people are hooked up to, you know, to wire harnesses like that. And even though he had wires hanging all over his legs and kind of covering up his lower half to a degree, I could still kind of see that. And it just felt, it didn't feel like he was floating there in a position of power or in a position of like elevated, you know, awe or something like that. It just seemed a little bit awkward. Well, Stark has definitely taken the place of Zan now in that he's like Mr. Spiritual Man, but he doesn't really have the quote unquote wisdom, I should say, that Zan had, you know, but he's got like, he's more of like a, crossing over with John Edwards, if you remember that show. You know, he's more like a medium, I suppose, someone that kind of helps, can see spirits and helps people cross over into the afterlife and stuff like that. You know, which I just kind of like shrug and, you know, say whatever to, you know. You know, all in all, this wasn't like a great episode of Farscape relative to the other episodes that we're kind of seeing around this one. But it does advance, you know, the relationship with John and Aaron, a bit, and, or maybe even significantly. And, you know, makes us wonder at this point, man, their relationship is really moving forward. And there's still another John out there who is just as much John Crichton as this John. And he is not experiencing this relationship. I mean, where is this going? What is going to happen when they all get back together? And, you know, it's just, you know, it's just an interesting thing as a first-time viewer to think about that and wonder what's coming next. And they really do take you on a on a interesting ride, to say the least, you know, going forward from here. All right, well, yeah, and there was also a couple of just laugh-out-loud moments. I paused my recording for a second to try and remember what the other laugh-out-loud moment was. There was a, there were several. There was one that I'd never noticed before that was like a, well, never mind. But there was, yeah, there was several other laugh-out-loud moments, but none of them really come to mind, except for one not worth mentioning. That's it. What do we got coming up next time? Oh, yeah. Jeez. Scratch and sniff. Okay. Yeah, there's a interesting story. If this is the one I think it is, there's an interesting story behind the production of this. It's one I look forward to watching again. It's a weird one, which at this point, as we're going back and forth between these two crews of the show, the Moya crew tends to have these more bizarre episodes going forward from here, bizarre and humorous, whereas the other ones, you know, have plots like Aaron and her mom and stuff, which are a little bit more heavy. You know, I guess this episode wasn't really heavy, but anyway, yeah, if you're ready for the polar opposite of a heavy episode of Farscape, I think you have that look to look forward to in Scratch and Sniff next time.